You do everything fast and fancy and flashy. You get in shape in 4 weeks. It doesn't work like that. Joint preparation is the most important, and build up the basics. And after that, you can learn the skills you want.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Gornation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is Adam Godrossi. I'm super looking forward to this interview, to somebody who is doing a link and creating a link between calisthenics and gymnastics. And with gymnastics method, he is teaching people around the world about the gymnastics method. I'm really looking forward to this one. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks that you make the time for this interview. It's been like a really spontaneous interview, like at least the appointment. I was looking forward to this interview already since a long time. A lot of people asked for it in the comments, and also my colleague who is sitting next to me, Daniel, was asking, "Yeah, can you please interview Adam?" So thanks that you make the time. And yeah, today we will talk a little about your viewpoint to gymnastics, and I'm looking forward to this one. Maybe you can give us like a short introduction, maybe also a long one. But yeah. how do you have the connection to gymnastics? Who are you? What do you do?
All right, so I'm trying to make it as short as possible because I have a. Like, it's not a long story, but I have sub-stories, you know. the beginning is really simple. And for me, the motivation was the same as to many people, I guess. That I also had this privilege that in my high school, we had gymnastics classes after school. Because one of the PE teachers did gymnastics, and basically he finished the same university that I finished later, and he did gymnastics, and he did these classes after school. And once they had like a show, you know, we had high school days with different programs and activities, and they had a gymnastics presentation, you know. And I saw those guys. Because it was funny, because I knew those guys, but everybody was, it's four seasons in Hungary, everybody wore, you know, some clothes or whatever. And I saw them doing like pommel horse and all that stuff. And I was like, man, these guys are tough. And it was really basic stuff, actually. But I think, same as I was an outsider, so for many people who just see like a handstand or some basic gymnastics stuff that I learned in the classes back then, it looks spectacular because you just see someone using his body like, you know, smooth as butter. They do different skills and movements, and that, you know, caught my attention. And it was really good. But our PE classes were really good because we had different periods. And gymnastics was one period of the annually plan, you know? So we had like 2 months or a month when we did gymnastics. And it was a really old school gymnastics hall. I mean, like a Turnhalle with no equipments. And we had to set up all the equipments. So I was actually about to go back because now I'm in Hungary. And I wanted to ask whether they have all those equipments and they use it, because maybe I will make a video about what we did before every gymnastics session, that we had to set up the high bars. Only the rings were fixed, but it was only from the ceiling, so not the professional ones. And the high bars, the parallel bars were fixed, but you had to use like a special thing with wheels to, you know, push it there, and the mattresses and the pommel horse we had to, and actually I have a pommel horse in the gym here in Hungary that we use with four legs, and like, you know, it's the really basic stuff, and maybe like from 200 years ago. So we had to do that all the time, and my teacher saw me that I could do stuff better because I had some sports background. And he really wanted to have me in the team, and that's another funny but short. I'll make it short. He had he had ice cream shops, and he sold all these cakes and stuff. And he always wrote like little papers to everybody who came to training that you get three portions of ice cream or one like a Hungarian cake, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And once you went to the training and you trained, and the next training you got this little gift, you know. And mm-hmm. and many guys just started because of this, and it was like, oh yeah, that's cool. We started like this, but after the third training, we were like, this is so good, and we didn't even want the ice cream, because I mean we got, and we always got some challenges, like if you can do the muscle up on the rings, you can have like 100 ice creams, you know. And it was wow. like the challenge was bigger than the motivation of eating ice cream. So mm-hmm. I think if I go home, I still have these small papers that, you know, this student is eligible to get these ice creams. But yeah, it was funny. So eventually I ended up, you know, going to the trainings, but mostly I was inspired by those guys to do the routines. And I had two trainers. One of the trainers, like I said, who had the ice cream shop, he was really nice, and he was the positive. He motivated us the positive way. He always told us that it was good, but you have to do this and this and this. And the other trainer was the other way. It was bad, you know, like mm-hmm. he was tough. And he did all the warm-ups and the strength training. So that's why I didn't like the strength part, because it was like suffering, you know, because that guy always just, you know, pushed us really hard. And the high school years and until I finished high school, it was more about the routines and to go to competitions. And it was really good. We won all the competitions and we really liked that. But the strength part and what I do now and what I promote now came much later, when we grew up, you know. And we came to Budapest, and we went to professional gymnastics clubs that we want to train. And it was funny, because they had first class gymnasts who are like retired, and us, some of the guys who came from another city, so we didn't live in Budapest, and we had that community in that city, and we came to Budapest, and we went to this gymnastics club, and they saw us to train and everything, and it turned out that they have this second class competition, so they started to prepare us to these competitions. We were like three or four of us and two of the first class retired gymnasts, so we had a team, and we attended all these competitions, because basically it was a university competition system, because all the universities here in Hungary had gymnastics teams, and I think our team and maybe another team was like an outsider, not university, but a club. A professional club had a second class team and went to the competition, and we competed there for many years, I think for like 5-6 years maybe, and it was all team competitions, and basically we had to do a routine on every apparatuses, and everybody, so it has a score system that you can get 10 points on each equipment, and the best individually also gets the prize, you know? So we had like mm-hmm. team competitions and individual competitions out of those routines. So it wasn't like gymnastics, professional gymnastics today, that you put together your routine with the scores and you do the math, you know, like these are mm-hmm. my strengths. So I'm really strong. I can do all the static holds and bundings. So I do routine like that, or I'm more swing based, so it was a strict plan and a strict routine that everybody had to learn, and the best who did the best was the best, you know. So basically, mm-hmm. that's how I got into gymnastics. It was like kind of from the side, and until I did the competitions, we didn't really do strength training and all the skills, you know, like the we weren't interested that much in, you know, planches and all that stuff. And actually, I had a break in this process when I grew up to the level to decide what to do in life, and I went to a personal trainer course, and I also went to university learning kinesiology, and I started to, because I did university besides work, and before I had the university degree, I did all these courses so I could do personal training. So I started to train people in a gym, and that time I was doing the traditional fitness and bodybuilding training in a normal gym. But you know, gymnastics was always there, and I taught acrobatics also. And after maybe like 6 months in the gym, I missed the gymnastics stuff so much, and I also wanted to. So that was my realization that, okay, I have all these muscles and everything, but because, you know, the competition stuff was still there, and I had to go to the competition. But that time, I could really do the routines well. So I was like, yeah, I can do it. So I didn't train, you know. So like 2 weeks before I started to train to the competition, I was like, everything hurts, you know. I have the muscles and everything, but I can't use my body. And that's when I realized that it's you know, it's not the best thing what I do. And I also really wanted, at that time, because, you know, of the aesthetic part, I was interested in more in, you know, human flag and planche and all that stuff. And that's when I decided, okay, I want to stop, and I want to build up my body the gymnastics way. When I look good, I mean, I don't look like a bodybuilder, but I look decently, but I can still do this spectacular stuff. So I was really looking for the functional stuff in training, you know, because I got bored, honestly, to only work on my muscles, and I couldn't do anything, you know. So that's when I came up with the idea that I was in the same situation that many people are now, and many of my students, that they want to learn all this stuff, but they are adults, and they know that, okay, I'm not 5 years old, so I can't start gymnastics, and I'm, you know, I was sitting at a desk for 10 years now, and I'm not flexible and stuff, but I still want to do something. So it wasn't that bad for me, but at the same time, I still had to build up the strength. And many people think that, okay, you did some gymnastics before, so it's much easier for you. But if we take the principle, you know, of specificity in training, if you do just the swing elements and all the basic stuff, then, okay, it has, it certainly has some transfer effects, but it's so minimal. If you don't do a planche, if you don't do any planche specific training, then just because you did, you know, P-bar swings and shoulder stands, you won't be able to do a planche. You still have to train for it. And the main difference between the professional gymnastics approach and my approach is that they start to train kids, you know, like at a really young age. And the relative strength in those ages is really, so that's why we see kids on the playing ground and they can do anything. Like, yeah, they just hang and they, you know, flip their bodies and all that stuff, because the relative strength is really, really high when you're younger. And the approach of learning all these skills and the strength elements is way different than for an adult, you know, because they use many spotting, so they spot to the kids when they learn all the planches, the iron cross and all that stuff, and it's not happening when they are like, you know, 10 years old or whatever. They always wait for when they are like kind of getting adults, like 16, 17, you know, because gymnasts still grow. So, you know, kids, as kids grow, I know that they have many trouble to adjust the load, because they learn many things and then they suddenly grow a lot and they have to regress a lot to not injure them. So the harder skills they really teach like a later young age, but still they are light and they can spot them, and that's how they really build up the strength, and they have the opportunity to build a neuromuscular connection because on a high frequency, because they are there like, you know, twice a day, and they train like 10 times a week. And it's a totally different approach with this schedule than for an adult with 2-3 sessions a week, you know? But as I told you, when we just talked before we started recording the conversation, that I always trained 3 times a week. And I think it was because my schedule was like that in the high school sessions. We had 3 trainings per week. And it was just my habit. I had my training days, and I just kept training like that. And when I started to work, it was also an obstacle that I had to work and I had to work out. So that was, I think it was the same schedule that most people have with any other job, you know? I mean, my job was to train people, and it was more exhausting than to, you know, sit in front of a computer. And maybe if I just sit, I can train every day like I do now, because I'm editing the videos and all that stuff, but and I train more. But back then, and that's what I always emphasize to people who are questioning whether they can learn anything or not, that I did the same thing. Like I trained 3 times a week, and I built up all my skills that I do, and basically since then, and it only changed when I moved to the US, and I had more time because I didn't do that much training. I didn't train people that much, so I started to train more, and now I train 6 times a week, and it's more like more training but less intensity and less time, you know? So mm-hmm. I think for a certain level, if you want to achieve a good physique or you want to learn skills, you really need to choose. You have to work basically, I think, the same amount. You just need to choose how you schedule it, you know? It's obvious it's more complex than that, and there are some I have other thoughts on these, but the bottom line and basically in general, you have to put in the work, and you can do 3 sessions a week, like 1.5 hours or 2 hours, or you can train every day for an hour or something like that, you know? So you still have to work a lot, but the schedule can vary, and it only depends on your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. That's something that we can talk about later. At what, like, a question that burned into my head the whole time, at what age did you get into gymnastics? Like, what was this period?
It was 15-16 when I started these high school trainings, and like I said, the main motivation for me was to get a better physique, because that's another funny short story, that I was a short and fat kid for, you know, until I grew. But everybody said, like, no, because my parents were shorter than me now. So they were short, and everybody said, you're going to be a short guy and you're going to have weight problems, you know. And one summer I just grew, you know, a lot, and I got skinny. And I was like, cool. I'm not going to be the short, fat guy. I'm going to be the taller and skinny guy. So I started to train mainly because, you know, I wanted to put on some muscle and look better. And I really liked what they did at the classes.
Well, And the, then the ice cream of your teacher came, then you became the tall. No, but that's an unusual approach, like with the ice cream. But seems to work for a lot of people then, like a lot of your friends back then.
Because you know it was like it was a cool. I mean, it was a really nice shop and all that. You know, like because that city was a small city. And that was the ice cream shop. You know, everybody went there. And if you show up, like, I have free ice cream, you know, like, as a kid, that was cool. Mm-hmm. But as I said, some guys came just because of this. But it was just a thing. I think it was just like a little treat for everyone. And we didn't give a shit after, you know, like 2 weeks. Because we just really liked the training as that coach did it.
Is gymnastics like so popular in Hungary? Like, because I can't imagine or I can't remember that at our school there was like a gymnastics was a thing or something. It was like a part that you have to do in PE, but I don't know if there are like tournaments or stuff between schools. It's always been football and like soccer. But is gymnastics such a thing in Hungary?
Not really. It was even more back then. So my I think in my parents' generation, my first trainer's generation, because it was more like the Russian style PE classes, and as you said, we also had you know, gymnastics at the PE classes. We had different periods, so fundamentally it was there, and I think and it had some hot spots. So basically, Budapest and major cities had you know, professional gymnastics clubs. But unfortunately, it's less popular now. So, and also like soccer here is a huge thing, and it's also like a really good career opportunity. And I worked as a trainer at one of these clubs, and I taught little kids, and it was right in front of my eyes, like. 30 kids came in, and as the week, and that's the thing, you know, like, it was like 4-year-old and 5-year-old kids, and they were like all over the place, and you had to educate them to do all these springs and crawls and all that stuff that we do as a kind of a game, you know. So we play games, but those games are really. Educate your body, and but at the same time, you know, like gymnastics is and if you want to be, or if you want your kids to be a high level gymnast, it's a boring work, you know, and it's less playful than soccer, for example, because you know it's a ball game and everybody loves it, and so 30 kids came in. And after a few months, you know, 10 remained. So basically, it's tough because even other coaches, I saw that they had many, many kids. And as kids grew up and, you know, realized, my friends go to soccer and they, you know, like, and as they grew up, they hear all these opinions and many parents are like, if you do soccer, you can be a good player. And even here in Hungary, if you're not the top, if you're not in a top team, but in like a, you don't even know the name of the city team, you can still make a lot of money, you know, because it's that popular and they have many support and all these things. So I think that's part of the reason why gymnastics is not that popular, because many people see the opportunity to make like a side hustle, you know, because I know many people here who have a job and they still play soccer and with a team, they just have to go to the game and they make money. But you can't do this with gymnastics. Even the professional level gymnastics here usually join the military and they get a salary from the military as professional athletes, and they still have to do some military stuff, but they can focus on the career and they can go to competitions. And we have many, and we had and have some really successful guys. Also, we had the Olympic champion Christian Berkey in London on pommel horse. You know, and in history, you can see that Hungarian gymnasts were successful. So we should have a better gymnastics scenery here. But unfortunately, because of the Hungarian government and all these organizations really, really push soccer. So everybody goes to soccer, you know. So it's hard. So it's not a huge thing, unfortunately. But we have some tradition-loving people, like my coach was, and we had gymnastics, and that's how I got here. So I think if I wouldn't go to that high school and I wouldn't met him, then maybe I wouldn't even do what I do. So it was a huge effect on my life.
Oh, that's super interesting. Like so many things that we could talk about now with a situation of gymnastics in Hungary not being like the sport that somebody can fully concentrate on and make his living from, which is something that also like calisthenics is struggling from, that like there are world champions that can't live from being a world champion. That's maybe something for a second episode, because the main reason why we are sitting today here is and also the questions on Instagram that we received are to compare and to know, like, for us calisthenics athletes to learn more about gymnastics. You had like a lot of athletes that you were training with and looking up to, that you could learn from and ask questions and stuff like that. So you have like a really cool insight into gymnastics. So before we dive into this comparison, I have one quick question, which is what's your age, height and weight, because this is something that's always like that I always miss and people ask in the in the comments.
I'm 29 and but I'm gonna be 30 in October, so pretty soon, the triple X. And in centimeters, I'm 180 centimeters and usually 75 kilograms. I think it's 5'11" in like 5 foot and 11 inches, and I don't know in pounds. But anyways, you can calculate.
Should be something around 160, yeah. I would say. Cool. Thanks for this. So something that wasn't mentioned in your like story, which is super captivating and interesting, was the word calisthenics. Maybe you can give us the short introduction on what's your connection to calisthenics. Like how do you like, what is your connection to calisthenics?
Yeah, so calisthenics and the more popular phase here is street workout. And that's why, you know, many people are confused that street workout, calisthenics, gymnastics, bodyweight training, and, you know, like, what's the difference? And for an outsider, it's a legit question, to be honest, because, you know, every sport has the name, and we know why is that sport. And I always say that the overlap is really huge in all these areas. And my theory is that, or my opinion is that it's a totally different discipline, in a way that gymnastics is a more organized, and it's a competition sport, you know? So it's, I say organized because the traditional way of doing gymnastics is, if you're a kid, you go to the gymnastics club. They select the people, so it's like, that's also a huge thing. And I remember my coach told me that they invited the parents and everybody, and even sometimes the grandparents, to see if they are tall. Because if they are tall, they said like, okay, that's not gonna work, because in gymnastics it's not good if you're tall. And they selected the kids, and they also went to the schools, and like even, I don't know, to the primary school, and they selected the kids. So it was kind of, we can say that it was a privilege to do gymnastics, because if you had the right abilities, they went there to host a class, and they watched the kids. Okay, this kid is good, and they can move well. They selected the kids, and they said, okay, here's the opportunity to do gymnastics. And obviously, the best motivation for parents was that he might gonna be an Olympic champion, you know, or a national champion, not really the. But I think back then it wasn't really like a financial stuff. According to sports, you know, nobody did sports because of career opportunity. It was more like for the prizes, you know, and for the titles. But they selected the kids, and then it started as an organized education. They had the plan what to do with kids from age this to this, and with the youngsters and all that. With you know, they had the plan. And I know many guys here, and that's my connection to calisthenics. That it's a really good memory that I saw these guys coming to the gymnastics gym, because we had the opportunity. I mean, in that club where we went, I think we were the transition between the professional gymnasts and the guys who wanted to do gymnastics and learn all the skills that we wanted to learn. And the guy who was the head coach, he's obviously an elder man, but he was really cool. And he was like, yeah, we can do classes like that. And, you know, and obviously they could make money. We invited all these guys, and we had some friends, and they called their friends, and more people came to that club, and that's when I met the guys from the street, and they were like jacked, you know. I was like, "What do you do? What do you eat? What? You know, like, yeah, we just go to the park, because." As we had the opportunity to go to the gymnastics gym, and we had all the mattresses, the foam pit, and all that stuff, we always trained there. And as I said, we wanted to learn, you know, double backflip from the rings and all that stuff. And we obviously did some strength part, but that's when I saw the difference. And then the freestyle wasn't even a thing. And they just did the calisthenics, like sets and reps. Dips, pull-ups, push-ups, all that stuff. And back then we didn't even have that much parks than we have today. And I'm really glad that in Hungary it's a huge thing. And we have many, we also have like manufacturers based in Hungary. And I'm glad that the cities and all these, all like villages have really good street workout parks. And it became a thing. Mm-hmm. And those guys trained in, like, you know, playgrounds and stuff. But as they did all the basics, and in I think they and they also used weights and all that stuff. So they were really in good shape. And as you said, calisthenics guys, like the OG calisthenics guys, are more and more interested in gymnastics stuff, you know. And that's why I'm glad that I met these guys to see how can you build your body with your body weight, even like more. Because I think that if we say that calisthenics and gymnastics look good, but if someone does like the OG sets and reps, calisthenics looks much better, because it's like more strength and hypertrophy centric, you know, like you focus on that only. And as I always say in gymnastics, they just build the muscle only to an extent to be able to do the routines well, so they don't want to build more muscle. And the calisthenics guy wants to be big and strong in those, you know, exercises, and they don't really want to do all the gymnastic stuff. But and then we see the freestyle part of it, which I think grew a lot in the past few years, and we see that it's getting really close to gymnastics, but the origin is different because it started from the street and with different communities, and the gymnastics started as like a traditional way, and you know, and I think calisthenics and street workout is the second chance for many guys like us to show that you can learn all these stuff. And I mean, not all this stuff, because you obviously won't learn all the gymnastic stuff, but you can learn what you really want, you know, because I'm sure that most of these people who want to learn or want to do calisthenics, they or even the freestyle, they don't want to do, you know, the catch-over and all that stuff that gymnasts do on the high bars, but they do, they want to do like a kip, they want to do 360, which is not even gymnastics skill, but you know, you can learn that. it's not the bad thing about the gymnastics approach that I experienced the same, and all these guys who came to the gymnastics gym and I met them, they said like, yeah, we tried this gym, that, but they always told us that we are too old and just forget about it, you know, because I mean, it sounds bad, but it was really that bad. they many gyms weren't open to welcome, you know, the average guys or the calisthenics guys or anybody other than kids, because they focus that much on the competition. We can, you know, I can understand. They didn't want any disruption, but in that club that we went, it started like that, and I think now because of COVID, it's still it's stricter again, but at least we had the opportunity. But even in Miami, I know that they have some open gyms, and I know that a community there goes, like street workout or calisthenics community goes there to practice, but it's not, you know, like, yeah, you can go anytime you want and you can use the gym. It's like twice a week and it's really late. Mm-hmm. And that's why you really can't take advantage of the gymnastics stuff, because more gymnastics clubs are focused on the competition level, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's like holding back to so many people from starting with gymnastics, because it's like it seems like such a high entry barrier sport. Also, like when you talked about the tough coach that, or the tough teacher that you had, not yeah, the ice cream guy, but the other one, like this is the I don't know, this is an image that I have in my head from gymnastics, being really competition oriented, on performance only, and street workout is like the way you can be free, you know, like freestyle, you can train, like even if it's not freestyle, but you can do whatever you want. It's like much more free, you can do it wherever you want, you don't need like a foam pit and the gymnastics gym.
But I think that's a form of something was born because of the need, you know, and I think street workout and calisthenics was born because of the need of doing these skills and this kind of movement and practice. So I think it's beautiful because, you know, like here in Hungary, if people wouldn't want to do street workout that much, we couldn't have all these parks. But obviously, if there is a need, there needs to be an answer, and that's the answer. And I think this is good, because for most people it's perfectly enough, and basically that's my mission, to teach adults gymnastic stuff, what they can take out of gymnastics and use for health and for performance and aesthetics, and prove that you don't have to start at a young age and you don't need the fancy gymnastics gym to do the gymnastics stuff that you want to do, you know? Because I honestly didn't meet any people who said like, I want to do like the double flip, double twist from the high bar. They always say like, yeah, I want to learn a handstand, I want to learn a muscle up, and all these things you can learn in the park or even at home if you have the equipment, you know, if you have a bar, and that's it. And I think there is a process, and that's something that I want to show people, that there are really important things in gymnastics that you should use and not learn the hard way than many of the guys who started on the street, you know? Because that's what I said, the professional support from a coach wasn't there. They didn't have the opportunity to go to the gym. So they were like, okay, we're going to watch some videos and we're going to start doing this and this and we'll see how it goes, you know? So it was totally experimental. And I think that's a good transition, that you have gymnastics, you have calisthenics. Like, I don't want to say that you have knowledge and you have no knowledge at all, because I think it's much closer to each other mm-hmm. now. But there needs to be some education and knowledge from gymnastics to be used in calisthenics to be successful. Because the other part that I met many times with my students, that they started to do calisthenics and they got injured and they stopped, you know? And then they watched my video and like, yeah. Oh, I skipped this one. So maybe I'm going to, you know, give another shot. And they came to me and they said like, yeah, I had a shoulder injury and I tore this muscle and all that stuff, but I see that it can be built up, you know, properly. So let's get it, you know? And I had many people who got injuries and we built up their bodies that they can do the dream skill and they look good and we could build up everything, because, you know, also the mainstream fitness mentality doesn't help, that you do everything fast and fancy and flashy and you get in shape in 4 weeks, because people have this expectation that, okay, then let's do that. I mean, I'm all about to get in shape in 4 weeks, you know, just let's get it. But it's not, it doesn't work like that. So, yeah, I hope I answered the question.
It's super interesting and definitely something that, has a lot of truth in it, that this transition of knowledge and of experience of this like old sport, gymnastics, old and experienced people with much more structure and experience, that this transition to calisthenics is happening and people don't have to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. We say like they don't have to reinvent everything and do everything the hard way. So this is why like also this podcast exists, because it's important that calisthenics number one is that calisthenics athletes themselves spread their knowledge and they don't want to keep it for themselves, but everybody is sharing their own experience so we can grow as a community and as a sport and knowledge gets structured and shared. But on the other hand, it's super valuable that people like you share experience and share insights into I don't want to call it the big brother of calisthenics, because this would be like the next question that I have, like, do you think it's justified to say that gymnastics is the big brother of calisthenics and that we're like in an inferior, weaker position as a sport to gymnastics because just of the long history and all the experience of gymnastics?
I think to some extent we can say yes. I mean, if we talk about, you know, the things that we talked about now, that it has more knowledge collected than we can say. But at the same time, as you said, like, There is no new thing under the sun. Basically, many of the calisthenics athletes figured out the right way, you know. And I think the main thing here is knowledge of anatomy and knowing the human body, you know, because also in gymnastics, it's not like all the gymnastics clubs and coaches were like highly educated, you know. They also have the history of getting better and better, and using different terms from the Latin language of the like from doctors and therapists, you know. Because I'm sure if we go back like 30 years, they didn't use like protract your scapulas and do posterior pelvic tilt, then just do this and that, and they taught the kids how to do it. But I think this like physiotherapy knowledge and the overall knowledge of the human body and anatomy, which really went to gymnastics, because you know it had the opportunity to grow knowledge more easily, because more and more professionals were involved, you know, like the professional gymnasts have therapists and they massage, and they had the massage and all that stuff. So those people started to talk, and they said, like, you know, and I think this is how they developed this this language that they use and we use more and more to understand the flexion, extension, and all these terms that we use today. And I think even in calisthenics they use it, and I think that's the key. And I would say that science or the general knowledge of knowing the human body and the functions of the body is the big brother of both, you know. And it's like the difference between calisthenics and gymnastics is what we talked about. It's a different background and different goals and the origin is different. But I think for both, the big brother is science and to understand the human body, you know. And this went first to gymnastics, and from gymnastics it went to, you know, as everything. Like if you go to a university, best case you know the most up-to-date knowledge, and then it goes down. And you know, if you are a physiotherapist and you write an article to Facebook, then it goes to the everyday person, and this is how you educate everybody, you know.
Makes sense. You also talked like which comes in combination with knowing your body and knowing physics and science and stuff like that. Should calisthenics athletes, to maximize their progress, should they copy or like take over methods from gymnastics, like spotting? Like spotting is something that I've never seen in calisthenics, like also all the equipment, yeah, with foam pits and yeah, like putting this foam on a bar when somebody does a flip, you know, like there's this coach who makes sure that the person doesn't hurt himself, stuff like that. Should a calisthenics athlete who wants to maximize his progress also use these techniques and these tools?
Absolutely.
From gymnastics,
I think everything that helps to reach your goal should be used, you know. And everything that makes you progress safer, it makes sense, you know. Like, why would you risk your health? Or using mattress, and that's what I see. Like I was judging in competitions in Hungary, street workout competitions, and I remember that, okay, the first one didn't have any mattresses, and the second one had mattresses. And, you know, like, because it just makes sense. Like, it looks cool and everything, but if you injure during a competition, like, you just... We always have to keep in mind that the goal is to enjoy the training and do it for a long period of time, as long as possible. And it's not worth to risk anything health-wise to just look cooler in our competition, you know? So I think these the safety mm-hmm. stuff makes sense, and the different methods like the spotting, and you know, like there are different methods in general in bodyweight training that we can't really measure like accurately the progress, you know. And for example, spotting is one of the worst because I can't tell how much I help you. And you don't feel how much I help you. It just, you know, it's totally experimental, but it's working. And we can rather use elastic bands with different strength to measure progress. But it's not like in weight training that you can measure, okay, it's like 20 kilos, then 25 kilos or whatever, you know. But I think all the tools should be used that makes sense, you know?
Okay. Interesting. So what other methods are there? Like we talked about spotting. Is there anything else that you can think about that you think people mm-hmm. should use more?
I think which is like, it's the idea, not exactly a method that can be used mm-hmm. and someone can benefit from is when you periodize your training, you know, because they have different periods when they do more strength, they do more skills and all that stuff. And the basic structure, I think, is really useful. And that's what I teach also, that how can you structure your workout to maximize your progress, and to think about, you know, long, and that's another good thing, I think, because we can say that okay, gymnastics is not a sport that they do lifelong, but if we see how many years they spend in gymnastics, then we can say it's a long-term thing, you know. So the gymnast you see doing an Iron Cross at the age of 20 basically prepared the body, if we say in general, for like, you know, 15 years. So it's a long-term thing, and that's what I also emphasize, that we always use numbers to add a frame. So okay, like this is a 4-week program, this is a 6-week program or a 12-week program, but you still need to think long term and in a lifelong process. And I think that's the real advantage of being a hobby athlete, you know, like a part-time athlete, that you don't really have the stress mm-hmm. to prepare to the Olympic Games or any competitions. You can do whatever you want and in the pace you want, and you're not stressed out of the deadlines, you know. And the periodization, I think, is important. Use different programs and always update your schedule in a way. I mean, it can be the same exercises, but you can play with different factors. You can play with the tempo, you can play with the weights, or you do it explosively, or all that stuff, because we all know that all the basic exercises are the best, but you can still modify something that gives you another stimulus to improve, you know. That's one thing that that I believe in, and what I do and I teach, that joint preparation is the most important, and everybody should start with that and keep in the program to avoid injuries and build up the basics well. And after that, you can learn the skills you want. So that's why I promote to have skill block in your training, or have a skill training, a dedicated skill training. And after that, everybody wants to be stronger and be more, you know, aesthetic. And these are the methods you can really use that I said, that if you just do the basic exercises and you use rings, you use different time under tension, you do explosive variation, or you use weights, and in the weights it's like a whole new world that you can progress more and more, and you can do deload weeks, you can progress in the different periods, and that's what I mean by periodization, that you can switch up things but work on the same goals and make your training more enjoyable and versatile, and nobody is in a rush. So you have the time, you have the freedom to do whatever mm-hmm. you want. Just always strive to be better in a smart way, and you don't have to kill yourself in every session, you know.
Mm-hmm. Super interesting. Could we go through like one example for maybe like a workout schedule with also with a small side note to the
period.
Okay. Yeah. Damn it. You know what I mean, like with integrating the periods of the workouts, can we like go through one schedule for a month, or like I don't know how long you do these for 3 months something, so we take like as an example somebody like an average calisthenics athlete who wants to learn, who is like stuck at a tuck front lever 5 seconds and like a tuck planche 5 seconds, and he wants to achieve the full front lever and the straddle planche. What could one schedule look like for him?
And what worked for many of my students and also myself is to structure the workout in a good way, you know. Specifically for the planche and front lever, you need to train every aspect of the skill to give your body the best stimulus to improve. I think that's important. So the workout session itself, targeting that skill, should be well structured. And using the exercises and using those so the energy you have in a workout to use and distribute the energy in a good way. So you shouldn't start with the low intensity and so you shouldn't start with the supplementary work, and you shouldn't start with and that's one thing that I always promote and emphasize. That if you want to learn a static skill, then you want to improve your static strength, you know? So it's the specificity of training that, because I don't say that it's impossible, obviously it's not impossible, that a few athletes say that they only did front lever negatives to learn the front lever. But I think there is a better way to learn the front lever than just do negatives, you know? And if we talk about specificity, it's not specific at all to learn a static skill with a negative, you know? Like, I mean, you need to train the static part of it and have a spot in your session to work the static progression. And that's in my method. That's what I emphasize. If it's a static skill, then you should choose static progressions first, and give your best to the static, and then you can still do all the other stuff, the negatives, the to strengthen the muscles and to work on hypertrophy of the muscles that you that is involved in that skill, and do the supplementary stuff, and. And it's also like there is no. So that's why I only have examples or like sample workouts for these skills, and for the static skills, I'm rather explaining to my students how to think about it, you know, and how to approach that training, and how to change it if it's possible and if it's needed, because I think there is no perfect plan that fits everyone, and will teach you the planche. Like, I wouldn't write down like a year schedule, whatever, you know. Like, that's why I rather explain that if you got stuck with three sessions a week, the progressions, then you should increase the frequency and use like GTG, you know. And so that's the thing, that if something is not working, if you got stuck, you need to change something, you know. And maybe it's a deload, because maybe you're overwhelmed and your nervous system is just too exhausted to push itself to hold, you know, more than 5 seconds, or you have a missing link that you need to emphasize more. Like, just an example from a post that I just posted on Instagram, that, for example, for me, front lever hold was like 5 seconds really stable, and I realized that my core needs to improve more if I want to hold the front lever more, because my back was strong enough, but I always felt my hips sagging, you know. So I started to do dragon flag. I was good at dragon flags, and I started to do dragon flags with some weights, so like ankle weight, or you can grab like a small dumbbell and put between your feet, and I hold that and that helped me so much that, like, I was focusing on this for like a 4 week period, and after that my front lever went up to 10 seconds easy. And that's the thing, that and that's why I think that it's and that's why I do the live Q&As in my group, that if something is not right and if you can't figure out, then if it's worth to talk about it and show me and all that stuff to figure out what's the problem, because I figured out that my problem was the core, and I paid more attention to the core, and it helped. And that's why the question is like 5 second tuck punch hold. We need to see what are the missing links, or it's just the end of a period. So even if it's unconscious, maybe that 5 second is your period max. You need to chill, just do some planche leans and regress for a week, and then try again. Or you just need, you need extra stimulus because you're fresh and everything, but you need more frequency. So basically you increase the frequency and you'll get better at like that, you know. So I think if we talk about like coaching, and I saw that in gymnastics too, that it's hard to figure out what the real problem is, but we always need to try to solve it, and eventually we find the best way to solve the problem, and it works, you know. So mm-hmm. The bottom line is to change. If something is not working, sure. Change, and that's another big thing that I always tell my students, is to be more self-conscious and monitor everything, like how you feel. And you don't have to write it down or whatever, you know, like you just need to think and do it daily. Like, okay, yesterday's training was a bit too much, and I think it's really worth to use different tools and gadgets that we have now as with the modern technology. For example, I measure my HRV daily. So I and you know, the more you do, the more you see the trends, and you learn more, and you know what the situation is, you know. So I think that's, for example, the HRV is a good thing to watch, and you can figure out, like, okay, I'm a bit overtrained, so I need to, you know, regress or chill. And see the different things, like how you feel. Maybe you have, so it's a really like for most people who use like an online guide or train from YouTube or whatever, they really need to be more and more self-conscious to figure out these plateaus or involve a trainer or coach, and they can help. But it's part of the process, and it's a part of the process that can't be missed, I think.
So another thing that plays a big role in gymnastics, and maybe also in the fact that you said that calisthenics athletes, like, at least for me, it feels like that we as calisthenics athletes, we are like hurt and we have like injuries much more often and frequently than gymnasts have. Like, I don't have the comparison to gymnasts. I just see that every calisthenics athlete out there feels like that he has like some inflammation in the joints, like tendonitis, wrist pain, stuff like that. So maybe it plays together with the mobility point, but why do you think like calisthenics athletes have so many injuries?
I think it's like the same answer that we talked about already, that they don't have the knowledge or the idea how much to train, or you know, like, I think it, the training needs to have a basic structure, and even for many people, even warming up is a thing that they don't do, you know. So even if they would just warm up, and that's the other thing. Like, I think there are fundamental missing points that of how a general warm up looks like, you know, because that's what I saw in calisthenics. That okay, I can do push ups easily, so that's the warm up, you know. So once you have the muscle up and it's easy, then that can be a warm up, right? But it's I have a different opinion. So I still do the traditional gymnastics warm up, and that's something that probably I do because I have that small background, and I got that education to, and the habit itself that we always started with a warm up, you know. And it was a And it, you know, it was with the trainer, so we were like, the traditional gymnastics warm up is like they do like 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's also like a thing that improves your skills, because you hear the rhythm, you have to move for the rhythm and all that stuff. So these are under-emphasized or underrated parts, small parts of gymnastics that many people can benefit from, you know, like in general. So like all the movements affects your brain and your mental endurance, and if these are have this, you know, this little spice that it's like a rhythmic stuff, you have to learn how to circle your arms and your how to do bend forward and all that gymnastics. And that's why I always teach that gymnastics warm up, because it just improves your abilities, you know, so thoroughly and so many ways. And it oils the joints, it prepares the body, the muscle elasticity, the body awareness, the nervous system, your cardiovascular system, your respiratory system. So everything is just that's why it's a warm up, you know. It prepares your body and prepares you mentally and physically to do the workout. And that's a feedback of many of my students, like, yeah, as we did this warm up and this prehab, the prehab is another part, but as we did this warm up, I just feel like I can move more freely, and I'm like, I'm ready, you know? So, and that's what I saw, that many guys from, you know, in the parks, they don't really warm up. They just start doing push ups immediately. They do all the stuff they are working on immediately. and they skip progressions, and they are trying, you know, the muscle up so hard that it's and I always say that it's like lottery. Do you win the injury or not? Because I know many guys who are not injured, and they learn things in a risky way, but they are still like healthy. But I know more who learn the hard way. So like injury and inflammation and stuff. So they had to take a break. So I think it's just something that is needed, and everybody should learn. And that's why I started to do what I'm doing, because it's just a message that, you know, everybody can benefit from these things, from gymnastics and from some basic, you know, physical education. And if just everyone should do, if everyone would do a warm up before every workout, and that's my achievement, that I say it's worth it, because it's going to be better for them, you know?
Do you have like a warm-up routine or like a video that we can link in the description?
Yeah, I have that 5-minute gymnastics warm-up on YouTube, which is the, I mean, I do the whole thing, and it can be follow along. And I also explain all that stuff, why it's beneficial and why it's needed. So it's on YouTube, and anybody can watch it.
Cool. So we will put that in the description for everybody who is interested in warming up more efficiently, because with this advice now, I think we get the general thing that doing push-ups is not like a good warm-up for a workout.
So I don't say that it can't be used as as a part of a warm-up, but because obviously if you do push-ups with a weight vest, then the basic regular bodyweight push-ups can be a good warm-up set, for example. But I always, and that's something that they teach in the university or any, I think in any trainer course, that there is general warm-up and the specific warm-up, and I put the prehab in between those, because the general warm-up is just to move around your body and your joints to have the benefits that I briefly mentioned, and the prehab is part of a warm-up, and that's why I say prehab, because it prepares your body to be in support, for example, to be on a ring support or just in the push-up, because many people who work on the computer, they already have some wrist pain because of, you know, because of the stiff hand position and stuff. But even if they just support on the ground, they feel the wrists. So that's why we need to prepare all the joints to be able to do like a push-up position, you know. And even if you can, and because many of my my students who join, they say like, yeah, I tried this program and it's easy, so I skipped that program and I went to the other one, you know. And I always say that it's not about the intensity and it's not about the difficulty. The point is everybody can do these exercises, but the benefits are not sexy. So it's not bigger muscles and, you know, like you getting more shredded, but you will have healthier joints and stronger joints, so you won't have pain later when you do your workout. And that's an important part. And the funny thing is that all can be done in like 15 or 20 minutes. So the general warm-up and the prehab routine, which is the thoroughest prehab routine that I have, is all together it's like 20 minutes. You know, and if you train for an hour, you still have 40 minutes to do anything you want, and the stretching as well. So it's something that everyone should do, I think. And only after that should come like, okay, I do some push-ups to warm up, you know, because for a more intensive exercise, it's a good warm-up, but even before that, your body needs a more fundamental movement routine to move around the joints, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah, I'm looking forward to this video. So we will put it in the description so you can like check it out and get more specific knowledge about that and follow it along. We're slowly coming to an end of the interview.
I talk too much
due to a lack of time, which is unfortunate because it's like so valuable and so interesting. So I can imagine definitely like doing a second episode about like more specific topics and the specific questions that like happen and are in the comments after this interview. Thanks already. And as in every interview, we always have some quick questions at the end of every interview. What's your favorite food?
My favorite food, like we don't see the health stuff, then burger. And if like clean food that I could eat for the rest of my life is some kind of chicken breast, like prepared, you know, like even if it's just the natural way, with rice and salad, you know, like the original clean package. I really like the taste. Yeah, the typical. Nice. That's the clean, and the burgers is the other.
Yeah. What athletes are inspiring you?
I don't have
you?
Specific athletes. Every athlete inspires me where I can see that he's doing from the heart, you know? So I can tell. Should I tell a few athletes? Yeah. I have many.
Yeah, why not? Do that.
Just from the top of my head, I really like Gaji Atarov, Daniel Lysens from like this community. So not the gymnastics community, but from gymnastics, I personally knew him. Sylvester Cholain was a really big inspiration for me. He was an Olympic champion in Sydney on rings. So yeah, I mean. Many, you know, I if I just scroll your page on Instagram page, every athlete inspires me. So everybody inspires me who I can see that they are like all about it, you know.
Nice.
So that's why I just mentioned a few big ones, but you know, even like I see your Instagram and many athletes I don't know or I never heard about them, but they are like really inspiring because they are like cool and strong and all the things that you can be inspired by, you know. So it's good.
Nice. Do you have a favorite skill?
Yeah, I have many. But these are the two, like static and dynamic. It's
okay, cool.
Flange and
pull or push?
Both. Can I say both? I like both. No, only one. Then
no. If you would have to decide, like for the rest of your life, you can only do like continue with one.
I hate that.
Which
question.
One would you choose?
But maybe pull. I like the one arm pull ups and chin ups. So you know, it's maybe the pull.
Last question: what's your message to the calisthenics community, or what's your message in general to all the listeners?
The main message is what I just talked about all the time. That you know, I think do your research and try to make your progress as easy as possible with using all the knowledge that you can access. I think that's something that we have many resources, even for free on YouTube. And do your research before you start something new, because I'm sure there's going to be great resources from all over the great YouTubers and athletes. And thanks to these podcasts that you do, that they can benefit and they can have a much easier time just because of that information that they listen.
Wow. Nice. So yeah, we finally get to the question, how can people, like somebody who is now with us for 1 hour and 22 minutes, he will think, oh damn, like Adam is so smart and he has so much value and like he talks about these groups and I want to get into this group. How can people apply for coaching? How can they learn from, continue learning from you?
So my website is the best way. And that's where I have my my plans. I don't do personal one-on-one coaching at the moment. So that the message that I said I just said applies here too. That most in my experience, most of the people who join already watched many of my YouTube videos, and I think if they watch the YouTube videos and then join and they understand and watch the explanation videos and the website, then, because my goal is to make this process as easy as possible, you know, that's what I'm striving for all the time, even if maybe, you know, something is not perfect and you have questions, but generally you have many info on YouTube and on the website that is already giving you enough information to start. And I think for a basic level to have the joint preparation and the basics built right, until you don't start a specific skill, which is an advanced skill, and you get stuck and you need help. Until that, most of my people are just fine, and they come to the Q&As. I mean, many people don't even come to the Q&As because they don't have questions. So that's I think is a good thing, because we can, as trainers, we can always educate people enough to get started and to get to a decent level, because you know, everybody has different needs, so. I think for the vast majority of people, my programs can be enough to reach a good joint health and to build a good physique. And only those people come who have specific problems, like I'm really trying to do this and that, but it's not working. And they send the video to the group and I said, okay, so this is the missing link. And you probably skipped that part. So like, you know, like, things that they should have done, but they just, you know, overslid or something. But in the group we have conversations on general topics. Sometimes people ask opinions, and if they have specific problems, they just post the videos and I comment and I help them. But it's there as an opportunity. But do your research before you ask. Because if you ask something that is obvious and obviously there, and if the video is there, then, you know, it's just annoying to repeat myself, since if you watch that 2-minute video, it's there. So I don't want to be rude or anything, but this do your research stuff. Because from my end, if you think my way, I tell you that this is my intention to prepare everything to be there and answer the questions as many people have. But if it's already there and if you find the right source, then you don't have to ask. You already know what to do. It's like a book. If you have a good book, like a good instructional thing, how to set up this furniture, and everything is there, then you don't have to ask. You just need to do the process. You need to do the work. But there is no question, because everything is there. And that's what I'm striving for. And I know that it's impossible. So that's why I have the group, that if someone has specific questions with the process that got stuck or whatever, then I'm there to help.
Cool. Nice. Definitely makes sense. Fully understand you. And yeah. Awesome. So thanks for sharing, thanks for taking the time, thanks for being here and accepting the invitation. So yeah, I think I learned a lot. I hope everybody also who stuck with us also learned a lot. And yeah, if you like this episode, it helps a lot if you give it a thumbs up. And Adam, you can end the episode.
I look forward to the next episode, part 2. Thank you so much.